Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. James Franklin at his press conference earlier today. Late signing period. It's come and gone. Penn State did sign some players today. We'll hear from James Franklin's press conference in a few moments. And then we'll also have other parts for you after 4:35 on top of that. First of all, our play-by-play call today. Earlier this year, St. John's was able to win at home over Marquette. This time they went to Milwaukee, and guess what? St. John's did it again.
They need a three-quarter court shooter.
Well, you got to get the two-point lead, but you got to play Christian Leighton or Duke defense if you're St. John's. Don't let him throw it all the way down.
And they miss it intentionally off the front of the rim. Three-quarter court shot put up in the air. No good. Ooh. By Sam Hauser. And it's St. John's that comes into Milwaukee. Wins over Marquette 70-69. The Red Storm sweep the season series. And I'll tell you one thing. This is an energized St. John's team. They don't need a plane to get back to New York tonight.
I'll tell you, Shamori Ponds is a really, really good player. Obviously, seen him in person. I give Chris Mullin credit. Chris Mullin's done a good job with St. John's. Not awesome and incredible, but he's done a good job with them, without question. It doesn't hurt that Ponds is there. Ponds can really play. He's a good college basketball player. All right, earlier today, James Franklin had his press conference where he talked about recruiting, but also this was the first time he's had a chance to talk about the transfers. So earlier today, from the Beaver Stadium media room, James Franklin.
James, with the number of transfers that you have, is that a cause for concern or more a sign of the times?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think the point that you made at the end is how we're looking at it. It's changed. College athletics has changed. College football has changed. There's been a lot of rule changes in the last 5 years that have impacted college football. You got the graduate transfer that started a few years ago, and that was to allow guys that had graduated with their undergraduate degree to go get a master's degree at another school that offered that graduate degree. Well, that's not how the graduate transfer played out. That's what it essentially was supposed to be. It's morphed into something that it was not intended to be. We allowed agents to talk to players from the time they're a freshman now until the time they're a senior. That's a rule change. You weren't able to talk to agents until their eligibility was up. And I know there was a lot of talk within the NCAA and the membership institutions about deregulation a few years ago, especially the rules that they didn't really feel like were enforceable. I don't know if that makes a whole lot of sense, though, because there's still a lot of people that aren't going to do it because you're not supposed to. And that's concerning. The transfer rule, I think, was magnified this year, obviously, with the changes with the transfer portal and the perception of guys being able to transfer and get eligibility right away. And there's so many things to go with that. Our situation's a little bit different than most because we have such a large number of guys that graduate early, and most of our guys have already graduated. So our situation's a little bit different. And for me, ultimately, I want our guys to be able to chase their dreams and be happy and be successful, and we're unbelievably supportive of that. For me, my concern isn't really about Penn State. I'm worried about college football. I'm worried about what we're teaching young people. I think one of the greatest things that I think that college football and college athletics teaches, it's a tremendous complementary aspect to what they're learning in the classroom. The mental toughness, the physical toughness, how to overcome adversity, those types of things. And I worry that we're creating a situation where it's path of least resistance. And in my life, I don't know if that's ever been the right choice or the right path. So I'm concerned. I really am. But what I've tried to do is I've tried to look at it a little bit like basketball. Basketball went through this a few years ago. And there's some specific programs that I've thought of and I've studied, but I won't get into the specific programs. But I look at basketball, and some programs struggled with this, the new basketball rules, the one and done, and they struggled with and they fought it for a while, and those programs struggled. They didn't evolve. They did not grow. They did not adapt to the new environment. And then over time, some of those programs decided they were going to embrace the new model and grow and move with it. And that's what we're going to do. I get it. It can be frustrating. It can be confusing. I get all those types of things. But we're going to embrace the new model. We're going to learn to work within it. It's really the sign of the times in college athletics. I looked last week. I think at that time there was 1,789 guys in the transfer portal. I worry that all those guys are going to find the right spot. So I just worry. I worry who's advising. I worry about where the information is coming from. I worry that there's a shift right now. To the emphasis being on the NFL and not on college athletics, which is, to me, education first, is how I got into this industry. And don't get me wrong, the NFL is a part of it as well, but to me, the emphasis should be on getting education first. And then if the NFL thing happens for you, awesome. And we're going to work very hard at helping you achieve that goal as well. But I worry about the shift. I worry about the mentality a little bit right now. I see players constantly posting, guys commit, and they say, I'm going to be at school X for 3 to 5 years. I mean, literally, that's the first thing. They're already thinking about 3 years. And I'm just a big believer that this model has worked for a very long time. And it's not perfect. It really isn't. And I know it's a long answer. I probably should stop talking. But I'm concerned, and this model has worked for a long time. It is not perfect, but I think about so many people that I know, whether it was small school football, whether it was major college football, that this worked for. Created opportunities for guys to get a great education, to learn mental toughness, to learn physical toughness, to take advantage of strength coaches and trainers and doctors and coaches and administration and off-the-field player development programs. There's so much good that comes from this. And I just worry that the direction this is going, that at some point the model's going to break. And I'm concerned about that. So I want what's best for the players. I want what's best for colleges and universities. I want what's best for our game. But I think, we're at a challenging time right now. There's no doubt about it. But I know at Penn State, we're going to embrace the new model. We're going to grow. We're going to evolve, and we're going to find a way to be successful in it.
Joe Giuliano, Philadelphia Inquirer.
Hi, James. How are you?
Good, Joe.
Getting back to that the transfer issue. What is your level of concern losing that kind of depth off of your roster? And would you consider bringing in graduate transfers to fill some of those spots?
Yeah, I think that's what's happening all over the country is you're losing graduate transfers, you're losing guys to the portal, and you're going to have to approach and take transfers from other schools. That's the situation that a lot of programs the country are in right now. So I think you're going to have to look at it from both perspectives.
Hey, James, how you doing?
Good, Mark. You got a haircut.
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
Thank you. Hey, how are you handling the situation with these kids who are transferring but are still in school? Are they still members of the team? Are they working out with guys? It seems like that would be an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, and that's all the things that go along with this that are tricky. And the NCAA's left it a little bit gray, so each school can kind of handle it how they want to. I also think this is something that at the beginning of the year, the compliance directors across the country went up and said, here's this new rule, and then kind of left it at that and didn't get into great detail. And the same thing with coaches, and each school's handling it different. So you may have a policy that you're going to cut the scholarship at the end of the semester and that they're moving out of the locker room and those types of things, but then another school's treating it differently. And then the players will come and say, well, this school's doing it this way, and another school's doing it different. So it's challenging. I think obviously there's going to come a point this year, because it's new to everybody, that it's kind of a work in progress and it's kind of fluid. But I do think there's going to come a point where we're going to have to sit down and say, this is how we're handling it moving forward. It's not new anymore. There's no gray area, and this is how we're going to have to do it. That takes what's in the player's best interest into account, but also gives you a chance to manage your own roster and understand how we're going to handle it here at Penn State.
James, where do you see Daquan Hardy fitting in on your roster at this point? And what led to him getting an offer so late in the process?
Okay, I'll repeat it. I think I kind of already answered the second part of the question, but I'll go through it again. But the first part is we recruited him as a corner and possible athlete. We know he can be a wide receiver as well. There's a lot of conversations about that. We know he can be a return man. We know he can be a special teams guy. But it really came down to taking Daquan to what I had mentioned earlier is we had documented times from our camp from 2 years ago on him that ran 4.4, and then it was evaluating his senior tape. He had a dominant senior year. I want to say over 25 touchdowns. I want to say over 10 interceptions. I want to say 5 touchdowns in the state championship game. And I think what happens sometimes with coaches, you get so caught up in the eyeball test and measurements. You know, Daquan's not a big, imposing guy at this point of his career. But if you put the tape on and watch his production, he had as good of a senior year as anybody in the country. That combined with the fact that we had documented times on him and knew he ran 4.4, that we said, hey, we got a kid in our state who's a unbelievably productive football player and is a winner, that this is the type of guy that you know, really this is what it's supposed to be about. You're going to have guys that you get involved with early on and get them on board. There's guys going to be in the middle, and there's guys going to be late. I think, you know, Christian Campbell, I think you guys remember Christian Campbell and Torrance Brown were two guys that we offered before the night before, you know, signing day, and both had really good careers here. One is, you know, is bouncing around the NFL right now, and one had a great career for us before it was cut short with some injuries. So, you know, there's a lot of paths of how you get, you know, to a certain place. That's in recruiting. That's you know, in relationships. That's with jobs. You know, I remember you know, interviewing for my first head coaching position, and, you know, that thing took a lot of turns, but it worked out the way it was supposed to work out, you know. So, you know, that's life.
Hey, James, you guys, since we last talked, obviously parted ways with David Corley. How difficult was it for you to come to that decision, and also going along that with Coach Parker coming in? What do you think are some of his kind of best attributes, and how did you identify him?
Yeah, you know, I am, I think you guys know, I'm a relationship-driven guy. So whether that's with the players, or whether that's with the staff, or whether that's with my family, those things are really, really challenging for me. I'd love to go to my whole career with never doing that. You know, I've done it now in 9 years. I've done it twice. And still struggle with that today because I understand the impact that it has. I look at the whole picture of it. But I also have a responsibility to the other coaches and staff members in my program. And I also have responsibility to our players, and I also have a responsibility to the lettermen and the fans and those type of things. So you got to balance. You got to balance that. But it is not an easy decision, and I never make these decisions on an island as well. You know, it still bothers me. You know, it really does. But again, I gotta have loyalty to a larger group as well. In terms of Coach Parker, you know, guy that I've been tracking for a long time. You know, obviously, it you know, was the interim head coach, you know, that we got a chance to kind of watch and see up close. A lot of people that I trust and respect, you know, in the industry, spoke highly of him. Obviously, having guys on my staff that have worked with him before, and Jaywan Sider, that carries a lot of weight for me as well. And then he crushed the interview. You know, he crushed the interview. So, you know, feel really good about what we've done, feel really good about where we're going, and got a tremendous opportunity to make a significant impact.
James, congrats on the class. 2020, I know you want to maybe take a break, but you can't really do that in recruiting. The region, according to people in my industry, is pretty stacked next year. Just what do you see from Maryland, New Jersey, Pennsylvania next year? Is it comparable to recent years? Is it a little bit better? People think it's going to be one of the better, you know, classes in the region.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because you look at recruiting class rankings and you look at, you know, where the schools are that typically recruit at the highest level and how many players they have within their own state, how many players they have within their own region, that factors in. And over the last couple of years, we've had some challenges there. So being able to adapt and grow, I think, is really important. But I do think the region is really strong. That's important. You know, it really is important, because obviously the closer they are, the better chance you have to develop the type of relationships that you need. So, you know, we're going to have to take advantage of that. And that is, you know, within a 6-hour, you know, probably a 6-hour radius of campus. And, you know, we're excited about it. So we've already got a pretty good start on it. You know, we got to kind of keep hammering through. And I think that's going to be kind of the nature of, you know, our program moving forward, as we got to continue developing like crazy. But I also think, you know, depending on how, you know, college football continues to evolve, we could be young. You know, we could be young. I also know there was a program a few years ago that lost a bunch of players to the NFL, had one of the youngest rosters in college football, and won a national championship. So, you know, again, you know, you'd love to have experience. You'd love to have those veterans on your roster, and we're going to work like crazy to have those guys here. But you also have to embrace the situation you're in and focus on the positives and try to work as hard as you possibly can to eliminate, you know, some of the negatives and some of the weaknesses. But they're there. Everyone has them. But we're gonna spend our time focused on the positives and the strengths.
James, going back to Coach Parker, had you ever interviewed him before? What specifically did he do in the interview that, you know, for him to crush it? And then what did you see in his time specifically, again, at Purdue and Duke, that kind of, you know, made him stand out to you?
Yeah, had not interviewed him before. I thought the Purdue experience is a important experience, and I think it's a unique experience. I think as an assistant coach, everybody kind of sits there and thinks they understand what it's like to be the head coach until you're actually sitting in the chair. So having that perspective, having some guys on the staff that have been head coaches before, having some guys on the staff that maybe have filled that role in, you know, like he did as an interim, I think it gives them some pretty good perspective. And we saw a team that day that played really hard and played with great passion. And from what I understand from the people I talked to, that's why he got the job, is he was very well thought of with the players, very well liked, very respected, and that's what they needed at that time. So, you know, all the people that I've talked to and all the background checks that I've done, that's what's come up on him. And then during the interview, it's a guy that comes in and has a presence and then has command of the room, and then a guy that obviously has the detailed and specific understanding of the fundamentals and the techniques that are going to allow our guys to be successful at the very highest level. On top of that, you're talking about a guy that's going to be able to build confidence. You know, the fact that he played the position, I think, helps. It's not mandatory, but I do think it helps. It really does. So I think all those things, understanding scheme, you know, understanding scheme and how your position fits into that scheme. You know, I don't know if I mentioned this to you guys before, but, you know, we lose Saquon Barkley and we actually rushed for more yards per game and more yards per carry last year, but we dropped significantly in the passing game. We didn't make the plays that we'd been making, and we dropped too many balls. And there's a lot of factors that go into that. There's not one responsibility or answer for that. There's a number of them. I'm looking at it as a great opportunity. I know he's looking at it as a great opportunity. We got some talented guys that we're excited to see what they're going to be able to do this spring, and going into the summer.
James, just to clarify real quick, with the 2019 class, are you finished there, or are you still waiting to hear from some recruits out there? And then second, given that you are replacing so much depth, how important is it to have so many guys enroll early and are already here on campus with you?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. The second part is, you know, typically we've had about between 4 and 6 guys at mid-semester. Really, although we've lost, we pretty much have about the same number we have right now. Typically going into spring ball and winter workouts, our total numbers on our roster right now. So it's pretty similar. The 14 mid-semester guys with scholarship and walk-ons is helpful there. And then you had mentioned, what was the first part of your question? I'm sorry.
2019 class. Are you finished?
Yeah, it's hard to say that the 2019 class is finished. There's some guys that obviously are still deciding. And then there's some guys that may show up later in the process. You never know. But I think, obviously, I'd say the majority of our class is pretty much done. But it's hard to ever say, it's completely over, because there's going to be guys that sign late.
And the press conference isn't completely over. More with James Franklin from what he said earlier today after the news at the bottom of the hour on News Radio 1070 WKLPK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State, very strong December in the early signing period where they had 19 signees. Today they added a few more to that. It ends up being a top 10 class by most recruiting services. And now we'll see how it plays out. You will always get those who will lament those who have been lost. As you know, I never look at it that way. I lock in on who you have. I never lock in on who you lost. Can't do anything about that. You lock in on who you have and what you can do with it. Sitting there for 4 years or 3 years or 5 years of worrying about, I wish they'd sign this guy. I wish they had a... What does that do? I think they did a heck of a job. This is a really, really good class. Really good class. And 11 of them among the signees. They have 14 early entries that are out there now. And they've started their... winter conditioning this week with the coaches available to watch, which they did the other day, except they moved it to the afternoon, which is interesting. That's better for me. I didn't really feel like getting up at 4:30, but I've done it before. But you've got 14 early entries. 11 of those 14 happen to be guys that signed. Big plus. So, as a setup, Now the second part of the James Franklin press conference from earlier this afternoon.
James, you mentioned how difficult it is to let personnel go, but at the same time, after the Citrus Bowl, you had said about the special teams that wasn't up to your standards, you know, all season long. So just curious, what went into the decision to retain Phil Galliano, and how confident are you moving forward that he's the right guy for the job in 2019?
Again, you know, I have tremendous confidence in all of our coaches, based on their experience, based on their background. And for me, I don't make decisions just based on one area. It's a body of work. It's how are they with the players? It's how are they, you know, in terms of the staff? It's in terms of development of the individual players. It's in development of the scheme. It's in production on game day. It's in organization in practice. It is the type of role model they are for our players. It's all of it. And for me, it always comes down to, you know, is this the right thing to do for our program long term? And is the investment that we're making, are we going to get a return on that investment? And how long are we going to have to wait for that return on that investment? So for me, the guys that we have on our staff and the guys that we have in our organization, we feel very confident on. And again, you know, there's a lot of different paths and there's a lot of different journeys to get there. Some guys, guys are going to walk in and there's going to be immediate impact, and some guys, it's going to take a little bit more time. And I get that, you know, and I understand that, but. You know, I'm a big believer that the men that we come to work with every single day, and that's our players, and that's the coaches, and that's all of them. And you know, so that's where we're at this point, you know, with our staff and with our players.
Hi, James.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
Tommy Stevens' status, what is it? And he's had a lot of challenges the past year. How has that impacted his development? Not only as a player, but then as a leader. He's has more experience in the squad being here than anyone else.
Yeah, I'm a huge Tommy Stevens guy. I think Tommy's kind of the opposite of what you see going on in college football right now, because what we're seeing in college football right now is probably very similar to how the quarterback situation has been playing out really for the last number of years. You know, he's a guy that, you know, obviously, as we all know, there was a battle a few years back with Trace McSorley, and I stated, you know, to you guys and stated to them that battle is a lot closer than people realize. So, you know, Tommy decided to stick it out and stay with Penn State with maybe the greatest social media post of all time with his announcement to stay. And it's been awesome. You know, I think the challenge that he had this year is, you know, he had an injury. He had a pretty significant injury. And obviously it affected his ability to continue training and developing and playing the role that we needed him to play. And, you know, it's kind of led us to this point. So we got into a situation where Sean was able to take advantage of some of those opportunities that Tommy wasn't available for. And now Sean has gained a lot of confidence, you know, from that experience as well. But, you know, I got so much respect for Tommy. I got so much confidence in Tommy. It's going to be a tremendous, you know, spring. It's going to be a tremendous summer, and I got a lot of confidence in the guys that we have in our quarterback room. I really do. I think Coach Ronnie's done a great job of coaching and developing those guys, and they've taken a lot of pride in it. But I think Tommy Stevens is a really good example that we should all be celebrating about a guy who made a decision and has done a great job academically and is ready to take the next step in the program.
Just to follow up, would he be listed as your number one quarterback in the spring depth chart?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, we're not in a situation to name a starter really at any position. But, yeah, when we start out, you know, he'll be – you got to put them in an order. So Tommy will be number one, and Sean will be number two, and Levis will be number three, and so on and so forth down the line. But at every position, you know, we have an open competition. And guys will have to battle. And that's even for returning starters. Returning starters have got to go out, and they got to prove that they deserve, you know, to come back and be the leader at that position. So that's across the board. And we want all our guys to embrace that. We want all our guys to embrace that competition and have fun with it and understand it's going to bring out the best in them. It really and truly is. So, you know, it's going to be a really good spring.
Hey, James. I wanted to go back to Joseph Darkwa, if that's okay. 4 weeks ago, I think he got his offer. 4 weeks isn't a lot of time to recruit anybody. When they're across the ocean, I have to imagine that's logistically insane. Did you make the trip across the Atlantic, and have you done that before? And can you kind of take us inside of that month that convinced him to invest his future in Happy Valley?
Yep. Yeah, so we had been recruiting him longer than that, but the offer, you're exactly right. The timing is right. I think our relationship with the coach helped. I think how we communicated with not only the kid but the parents helped. You know, he's an interesting kid because he speaks four languages, which is impressive. You know, especially in our country where we don't embrace that like a lot of other countries do. He speaks. I hope I pronounce this right. So he speaks Cree, which is I think native language of Ghana, which is where his family is originally from. Mom moved to Germany 30 years ago. So he speaks Cree, he speaks German, he speaks English, and he speaks a little Dutch, is how he explained it to me. So when they came on the visit, came with his brother, who's fluent in English, came with Mom, who understands English, but is a little shy and also isn't comfortable necessarily communicating back. So that was tricky. And then Dad was not in Germany at the time. I think he was in Ghana. So then we were trying to go see Dad because he was the one guy we hadn't saw, but he was in Ghana, and that's a whole nother type of trip. So we actually never went. We plan on going out this spring, but we just couldn't make it work at the end with the other things that we had to do. But obviously the way technology is now with FaceTime and all those things, it really helped. But no, we'd not been out there. There was Terry. I don't know if you guys know, but like Terry's like the world traveler. So like every off season, he goes on some unbelievable trip with his family. I think last year they went to Africa. He's been everywhere. I mean, literally, they go on some unbelievable trip. They're going somewhere this summer too. He was just telling me the other day. So you can imagine Terry was like, "I'll go." You know, but he wanted to go for like 2.5 weeks, you know, and bring his wife and his kids and those types of things. I can't really say that any part of recruiting him was your usual, you know, situation. It's very different. But I do think the way this, if you look at this program, it is growing. I mean, it's amazing how many guys have signed out of this program in the last couple of years. So I could see this becoming more and more of an emphasis. I think the only thing I've done is Canada. And the way the NCAA rules are, they're tricky. So, for example, when we recruited Sutherland was going to boarding school in Northern Virginia at Episcopal, if I remember correctly. Well, the way the NCAA rules are, you have to go as the head coach. I only get one day, and I got to do both those visits in the same day. So went to the school, saw him in Virginia, met with his coaches, and then had to fly to Canada on the same day to meet with the parents. Maybe the best home visit meal I've ever had. Dad's Jamaican, and he made curried chicken, which is one of my favorite things, and sweet plantains. Me and Terry crushed them. And then really had a very similar situation with Daniel Joseph, who was boarding school in Chicago in Canada, but that was a little bit of an easier trip, obviously. But I think that's the extent of my type of travel that I needed a passport for.
We have time for two more.
James, just going back to the wide receivers, obviously a ton of talent and youth in that room, and as a result, this is a crucial year for their development. So with Coach Parker's hire, where do you want to see the most improvement aside from obviously eliminating drops?
Yeah, I think it's overall skill development and confidence. You know, I think that position is a really good example of kind of what we're working through right now. is you got really talented guys. You know, you got KJ Hamler has done some fantastic things. You got Jahan Dotson, who kind of came on at the second half of the year and did some really good things for us. You got Cam Sullivan Brown. You got Justin Shorter. You got Mac Hippenhammer. You got a bunch of young, exciting guys that are coming on. And then we got some other guys in the program, too, that we're excited about. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. And then, you know, the two freshmen coming in, as well as some of the walk-ons being able to earn some opportunities. You know, I think Lutz is an interesting guy. I think Chasin is an interesting guy. Chasin is a guy that we recruited. In some ways, that he went his senior year, he ends up winning the state 100 meter, and then all of a sudden the track program steals him from us. Just kidding. But goes and runs track for a couple of years and then comes back to us. Big guy who can flat out run 4.3 guys. So there's some interesting storylines there. And I know coach is interested in working with those guys. I think you also know, you guys have heard me talk about kind of the further away from the ball you are, the easier it is to get on the field earlier. So, you know, a bunch of those young guys are going to have a tremendous opportunity to step up and make some significant moves. Daniel George is obviously the other guy. All he does is catch, you know, Beaver Stadium record touchdowns. The longest touchdown on Beaver Stadium, 97 yards. So there's some talented guys there that we're excited about. And obviously we got, you know, we feel really good about the tight end position and, you know, offensive line and our quarterbacks and defensively. So, you know, it's going to be we're going to be young, but we're going to be talented, and it's going to be exciting, and it's going to be really competitive.
Last question to Greg.
James, you mentioned Tommy Stevens as being an example of a guy that maybe goes away from that trend that you're seeing in college football. Lamont Wade would seem to fall into that category as well. What were those conversations like when he wanted to maybe look around and then came, obviously, renounced that he was going to stay at Penn State? And just how delicate is that time when a guy's looking around, but, you know, some obviously say right away they want to go and grad transfer or whatever, and then some in this case, you know, obviously maybe look around and come back?
Yeah, I think that's where this thing was tricky. The funny thing is, Tommy Stevens is really the original transfer portal. But to me, he did it the way it should have always been done, and I think could still be being done right now. He came and talked to me, you know, had some concerns, wants to start, was graduating, had 2 years left of eligibility, and we kind of said, well, let's kind of talk this through together, and what are your objectives, and all these types of things. And you know, we were able to come up with an understanding between the two of us, you know, and his family and his high school coach, that, hey, look around, and if you find something that makes sense for you, then there's nobody that's going to be more supportive of you than us. And he looked around and didn't find that and said, I'm staying, and kind of went, you know, from there. So I think it's a really good example. I think where my issue with all of this is when we put rules in, new rules, we overcorrect. So we go from one extreme to the other extreme. So I think, obviously, part of the reason we got to this situation is you had a small number of coaches that were abusing the ability to block kids from transferring to schools. So we went from coaches could block you anywhere to now no blocking, just free agency. And to me, there could have been a model that made sense. It could have been the NCAA come out and say, you can't go to any school that's on the schedule, but you can go anywhere else. Or the school can block five schools, and that's it. But we went from one extreme where the coach could block anything to the other extreme where you can't block any. And I think that's the problem that I see with the NCAA and the member institutions sometimes, is we overcorrect. You know, I think we saw that at Penn State. We overcorrected some things. So I think that's a challenge. You know, that's a challenge. And to me, there was a model that could have been a sweet spot in between the two of these that we're not in a situation we are right now, if that makes sense. Lamont was a little bit like that. Lamont came and talked. But now the challenge is you go into the transfer portal, it becomes public. Tommy's situation never really became public. Lamont's situation becomes public. There's a lot of voices. There's a lot of noise. The good thing is, back to the recruiting process, had a really strong relationship with mom and dad. Lamont's a year away from graduating. This doesn't make sense. You know, this doesn't make sense. So kind of be able to talk it through. He's able to look around. And to Lamont's credit, you know, he's frustrated. He wants to play more. He wants to have a big impact, and we want that for him too. So it's talking through all these things. And to me, that's what it really should be about. It shouldn't be about the NCAA coming in and telling you how to do things and overcorrect. It should be the head football coach, the AD, the parents, the kid, all sitting down and saying, look, let's do what's right. Let's do what's right for Lamont. Let's do what's right for Penn State. Let's do what's right for college football and come up with some solutions. So that's kind of how that played out, you know. But it's a tricky deal. It is a tricky deal. It's a tricky conversation. And I have some concerns right now, you know, about where this is all heading. And does it get to the point where you can't really make anybody happy because one group wants this and the other group wants something else? And does this model just blow up at some point? And I just believe that college athletics and specifically the game of football has done so much good for young people, for families, for me, for guys that I've been able to coach, for the coaches that I've been with. I would hope that coaches and ADs and presidents would all kind of sit down in a room and come up with these questions and decisions and answers together, because I think what happens now is you got presidents that look at things from one perspective, you got ADs that look at things from another perspective, you got coaches that look at things from a different perspective, and then you got the student athletes. And the reality is you got to get everybody in a room at the same time and talk through some of these things and come up with a compromise. It's never going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect. But I think you guys have heard me say this before, that this doesn't just impact football. It impacts the entire college model. And in a lot of ways, whether we want to admit it or not, football, in a lot of cases, allows the whole college model to work, specifically, you know, at places like Penn State. And then you have the differences of some conferences that average 16 or 17 collegiate sports. And you got other conferences that average about 30 collegiate sports. And they're very different models, you know. So it's an interesting time. But again, our focus is we're going to embrace it. We're going to evolve. We're going to grow. It looks different to our fans. It looks different to our lettermen and to the media. It looks different to me. It looks different to me, but we're going to embrace it. We're going to grow, and we're going to keep loving these kids, and we're going to keep helping them grow and develop as students and as players and as people, and we're going to find a way to run out there in Beaver Stadium and play an exciting brand of football and work very hard at making everybody proud.
James Franklin, earlier today, there's a new Bucknell football coach. Dave Cecchini will be the new head football coach at Bucknell. Lehigh played their offensive coordinator 5 years at Valparaiso. Valpo had not had a winning record since 2003, and Dave Cecchini was able to get that done in 2017 to get them to a winning record, their first one in 14 years. So he'll go from Brownfield at Valpo to Mathewson Stadium at Christie to be the head football coach at Bucknell. We welcome him to the area and to the program. All right, tomorrow's show's in Columbus, where Penn State takes on Ohio State. We'll talk to you tomorrow from Columbus on News Radio 1070 WKOK.